Hello, and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
And we are live here. I'm in the studio. Kitty's at home. Thanks to our technical crew, too, here at the station, Becky. We'd love to take your call this morning. 747-5877 is the number. If you want to call and ask your question, but you don't want to talk live on the air, you can do that as well. Becky will pass the message into us so we can hear what you're thinking about or wondering about. We have lots of things we're thinking about regarding the garden. It's been a great week in the garden. The weather has really been terrific. And then the warm nights make such a difference. Even if you're not a gardener, I'm sure you can see the greening up happening like crazy. Kitty, how's it going?
Oh, yeah. It's actually going pretty well. On Monday and Tuesday, I was like ready to eat my words and say, hey, just grow corn, you know, grow green beans, grow whatever you want, coconuts. but, you know, then reality hit back again. And so I'm very happy to say that I pretty much have most of my garden planted. It took quite a bit of oomph, and everything's kind of covered and happy. And what was really nice about yesterday and what looks like it's good about today is it's great transplanting weather.
Fantastic.
So not super sunny, not super windy, just kind of like high clouds. It's warm out. You know, you still want to water well, but they're not getting extra stress from being like instantly cooked as soon as you plant them.
And the thing to just remember is we normally don't think so much about watering, but when we have a period like this where we haven't had any rain, you need to water fresh transplants and especially little ones at least once a day and maybe even twice a day if it's a really hot, sunny day.
Yeah, I have everything covered, which I think helps with, you know, gets it down to one time a day watering. The other thing I'm watering regularly are my seed beds. Because, you know, especially carrots seemed like they're like can be seriously fussy about making sure that seed bed's evenly moist. And I also have fava beans out coming up from seeds. So I have those. I keep watering those.
I'm right with you on the carrots. I'm watching my bed anxiously because, you know, it's a germinate. Carrots are tough to germinate. And I don't know if that's because we have varieties now that are tough to germinate or just it's the life of the carrot or it's the life of the Southeast gardener. It might be any one of those things. But my carrots in my greenhouse, I started some early just for a few fresh carrots early on in the season. They germinated. They look great. The garden bed carrots, not yet. But lots of things coming up. I've done far more seeds this year than usual, so that's exciting. I don't mean far more carrot seeds. I mean far more plants from seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a spectacular. I guess that's the reward of being at home is that you can take care of all these seeds. So, and I actually just started some more. You know, I had most stuff planted out, but I finally got around to having space to start some beet seeds. So I soaked them. Actually, I soaked them for 2 days, and then I planted them. Not out in the garden. I actually planted them in little easy transplantable pots because I just don't trust beets. Beets are kind of my nemesis vegetable, which sounds nuts, but they're the ones I have to work the hardest at.
I know we all have one. You know, it's crazy stuff. Well, I think the fact that you're just starting seeds is a great transition to say, despite the fact that Kitty says she has everything planted, most of us don't. I have several things to go. I've planted a lot. One of the big successes and highlights of this last week was tipping out the soil from my dahlias from last year and finding out that they overwintered and they're sprouting. So I've renewed all that soil and the pots. I grow them in pots, big pots. So I renewed all that, fed them up heavily, and they are looking fantastic. So that was just one of my small joys this week is to see those dahlias. It's money saving. I'm okay. Yes, I'm spending some money on the fertilizers or whatever, but it's great to see those dahlias year to year.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I started a giant pile of them from seed this year, and the plants look really good. So with any luck at all, I'll have more dahlia tubers than I know what to do with at the end. and hopefully a lot of flowers, too. I don't know. I've never tried growing them from seed, so it's kind of been a fun experiment.
always fun to push the envelope. Well, speaking of pushing the envelope or the zone or whatever, this is Frost Free Friday. It is May 15th, and that Woo-hoo. Is the day that many gardeners in the Sitka area are looking to get to. This means that if you have things that are tender, supposedly now is the time. Now, we say this with a little bit of the hedge of the bets because we've seen frost in May, but it's usually later in May, but it's usually so brief that a quick cover of anything you have out that you think is tender, you can probably manage. I mean, even just a light single sheet of newspaper will make the difference if we had a cold day. But the weather trend looks really good, and it reminds us of a couple of things. Everybody's yard is a microclimate. I am only now satisfied with my garlic, which seemed to be behind everyone's in town. Am I competitive about my garlic? I don't know. But yeah, it's finally coming on. And my daughter assured me that we live in the Indian River low, which I know, again, to remain calm. And my garlic's looking great. So realize that everyone's garden location is a microclimate, and you should, as you garden over time, be able to tell what works best for you. I know up north they go by the size of leaves on the trees. If it's the size of a mouse ear, then it's time to do whatever, and that sort of is an authentic measure of what the weather is doing.
But it is always good to, like, take notes over the years at your site and know when things are starting and how they behave, because then it gives you a nice reference. I mean, things are always changing, and every year is different regardless of, you know, climate change or not. Every year is different. It's, you know, we're basically talking about the weather. But it's good to know how your site varies. So I know for some things I tend to be a little bit ahead of town, and other things I'm behind. I kind of gauge that with my nervousness about different plants. My garlic was like going gangbusters. I was like, geez, do I need to harvest this stuff in July? Will it be done? But my shallots were really slow. So it just depends on the item too.
Right. So we do have a theme today. We wanted to talk about slugs and thugs, and that just rhymes, so it's fun. But that's what we're gonna talk about. But we'd also love to answer your question. 747-5877 is the number. So, you know, we don't want to be all that everything's perfect and beautiful. We do have some struggles in our gardens. And I'll say, let's start with slugs, but I'll say right up front, and I'll say it again, thugs are relative. My thug might be your favorite plant. So I'll warn you there. But Kitty, how's the slugs this year? You usually have just the big forest slugs.
That's all I still have are the big forest slugs, and they're relatively easy to keep tabs on. I'll put a little sluggo around some things that I know have problems, but my biggest defense is actually going out and looking in the mornings and in the evenings, especially under the row covers, because they like it too, especially on these hot, dry days. But I think I have a little bit of an advantage. I have this feeling that the rough-skinned newts that live out here actually eat slug eggs. So I think that helps keep them down. But forest slugs in general aren't a huge problem for me. So I feel very lucky. Thank you, world, for that gift.
For most people in Southeast, that's not exactly the case. And if you have gardened in your yard for a while, you probably have plenty of slugs, and they come in different shapes, sizes, and colors. The downside is they all nibble, and they nibble the things that you most hope they don't. So there's several things to do, and that is find the places where they live and patrol those often and remove them. Timing early in the day or late in the day are the best time to see slugs out, or a rainy day, get out there in your rain gear, pick your slugs. Sluggo is the product I usually rely on, which is a commercial product. It's not dangerous to birds and animals, so I feel pretty comfortable using Sluggo in my garden and amongst my vegetables.
Yeah, so the strategy is the same whether you have lots of tiny little slugs or big slugs. It's vigilance, patrolling, maybe trying to remove places where they hide, but that gets kind of impractical. And then some sort of sluggo. I thought about trying diatomaceous gaseous earth, you know, kind of making like a barrier around each one of my beds, particularly the beds with the lettuce in it. You know, those are the ones that can get really vulnerable. But I haven't done that yet. Mostly because, yes, it's early in the season and I haven't been distressed yet by an invasion of forest slugs. But I have rock also in between my beds, which might just, maybe that's uncomfortable for slugs. I don't know.
Right. So the other thing I watch for is I know the species that the slugs eat first thing in the season, the ones they like the most, and I put Sluggo there before I ever see any damage. So that's a great opportunity to, you know, fight slugs off early on is know those plants. For me, it's my daylilies. Those first precious sprouts of the daylily leaves, the slugs are a magnet for. The other one is marigolds are a sacrificial plant in my garden. The slugs love marigolds, and if I plant a couple, I can usually draw the slugs right away, and I know right where to find, you know, right where they're going to be, and I can get after them.
Ooh, that's handy. I don't actually like marigolds that much. So I could see using marigolds that way as basically a bait crop, you know, that that pulled in the slugs. You can pull out, you know, all of those slugs from there. And if they eat some of the marigold, for me, that wouldn't be a problem. If you love marigolds, maybe that's not such a good strategy. But I kind of like having I like the idea of having a bait crop. Sometimes I'll do that with on another complete subject, radishes with my Brussels sprouts and things like that. I'll use radishes maybe as a bait crop to kind of test the effectiveness of my Rime, which seems to work pretty well. But I feel fairly fortunate, again, not to have too much in the way of slug issues. It seems like a lot of our pest problems here can be resolved with a certain amount of vigilance, you know, checking everything out using row covers and then some Sluggo.
So we've had a couple of calls. Bill called and I did not push the button soon enough. So Bill, give a call back. And while you're calling in, Rosemary asked whether she should fertilize her hellebore. She heard that she shouldn't. And is that true? What do you think, Kitty?
I don't fertilize any of my perennial plants heavily, but I do make sure the bed has kind of a low mixture of fertilizer in it, or, you know, nutrients in it. So I'll mix in some compost, and then kind of my standard mix is a little bit of bone meal and blood meal, but not huge amounts. I kind of, for most of my perennials, I give them kind of a low dose fertilizer with compost every year. And I fertilize, my hellebores get the same treatment. Whether that's the best treatment or not, I'm not positive. I'll have to look that up.
Right. So I have a pretty generic, old-fashioned hellebore, and it self-seeds like nuts over my garden, and it grows and expands readily. So I'm not actually trying to encourage it that much. And I think it also gets plenty of fertilizer from when I fertilize my rhododendron and my azalea, which are nearby. So you might think about that. Most of the perennials in my garden bed, I don't do a lot of fertilizing, and then I'll realize they're kind of lagging and that they could use some, and again, compost or something, not too high nitrogen.
Yeah, mostly if you want to have flowers, you don't want to give too much nitrogen. But I kind of like this kind of bone meal, blood meal mix, just because it has, you know, it has some nitrogen that, you know, the plants definitely need some nitrogen, but a little bit higher amount of phosphorus in it that, you know, takes a little while to break down and get into the plant. So that's, I'm sold on this mixture.
Nice. So we were talking about slugs, and we'll finish that up and go to thugs, but 747-5877 is the number. And Bill, if you want to try back to talk on the radio, or if you want to call back and let us know, I know your topic was Brussels sprouts, but I didn't get the question specifically, so we'd love to answer your question if we can. So anything else on slugs? I know, you know, it's just a perennial thing, along with your perennials, to really be on top of.
I know some people use bait. that you'll have to check every day, which is fine, the old beer bait. And then also people have had some luck circling containers with copper. I haven't done that personally because, again, I haven't felt the need to. But I do know friends that have tried that, and that has helped at least keep the slugs out from going into the container. Might be pretty hard to do it around all of your garden bed, so Sluggo would be the easier. Sluggo and Vigilance, I should say, is really the easiest option.
Yeah, that's
it's not easy, but it works.
Right. Somebody mentioned to me that anecdotally that the pennies, which we think of as copper, are not enough copper to dissuade slugs. So a rim of pennies might not do it for you, although there's often talk about that. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about thugs, and I think early in the year is a time to remember what that means. And all I mean is the plants that are so robust,
happy.
I'll say, yeah, happy and robust, that you end up battling them. And many of them are beautiful. One of the classics in my garden at the moment is the Campanula glomerata, and in Sitka we refer to that as China Mary, and it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous plant, but it's so successful here that it just is invasive.
So I kind of think of thugs as falling into two general categories, ones that spread by underground stems or rhizomes, and then ones that spread by seed. And for me, the ones I do the most battle with are the ones that spread by those underground rhizomes. And that's the Campanulas and the Adenophoras. Actually, Lily of the Valley can go a little nuts, although that's not quite as bad. Bishop's weed.
Totally at the top of my list.
Sorry?
Totally at the top of my list. That's one we're battling this year. Bishop's weed.
Yeah. Does it ever stop?
Well, we're trying. I mean, there was constant digging. There might have even been some flame throwing. You know, we really were getting after it. There was a bed completely taken over by it, and we just tried to get that completely eliminated. Now, it's so invasive, and every tiny bit of root will generate a new plant. So it's going to be a while before it's truly under control. It's much better than it was. So, yeah, its other name is gout weed, Agiopodium. So if you're wondering, mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. It's this pale green and white variegated plant. You'll see it many places around town. But, you know, it just, once you have it, and if you aren't really on it, you'll have it in spades.
So if you want a ground cover, a place that you really want nothing but, you know, one plant taking over the area, Bishop's weed is a good option because it's pretty effective that way. But it's not a plant to... it's the same thing with those ladybells, the campanulas. The other one that I find that also spreads by underground stems is the sweet woodruff, the Galium odoratum. Mm-hmm. I find that a little bit easier to deal with, though. That seems to be easier to pull out. But yeah, Bishop's weed, I'm like, oh, I got it out of this bed. Then I look back the next year and I'm like, nope, I lost.
Yeah. I love the sweet woodruff, and it is invasive. I would totally agree. The thing is, it's not so smothering as some of the other invasives. It seems to coexist a little bit better with some of the other plants, even as it's in and around. And in our climate, it takes shade really well. So that's one of the reasons why people do love it and plant it. Another one, of course, we could do a whole show probably on Japanese knotweed, which is the really big, tall clones of invasive things. If you look on the net, you'll see the horrible pictures of it coming through asphalt and brick walls. It's kind of scary. So that's a big one. Most people nowadays don't plant it in their gardens, so they know and see the big swaths of it. And it takes significant effort to get rid of that as well.
Oh, yeah. There's huge efforts in certain areas, basically mowing it all down and then covering it up with tarps for 2 or 3 years, and then monitoring the edge of that tarp, you know, for a little escapee. So that's not one to plant. Other plants, I mean, that's probably the most... that's one that's on our invasive plant list, as kind of a hazard to think about. One that's a native forest plant, or actually a couple that are native forest plants that also are very effective ground covers, that can be frustrating at times, is deerheart is one of them, and actually trailing dogwood. I know that sounds nuts because they're both really pretty plants, and where they're happy and where you have a big open spot for them, they're gorgeous, but they do spread really effectively by these underground stems. And so those are a couple of plants I kind of have to keep in check. Deerheart more than the trailing dogwood.
Yeah, the dogwood's gorgeous and it does spread, but it doesn't seem so rampant. The other one is horsetail. So we have horsetail here, and that's another one that's really, you just have to stay on top of it. It's another one, every single piece of root and stem reproduces. So horsetail's a tough one. You got to stay on top of it.
Yeah, there's no way. It's pretty difficult to eradicate once you bring it into your yard, and you don't bring it into your yard on purpose, I'm sure. But it's one of those plants. So when someone gives me plants, and I do this to everyone, so this isn't I'm not picking on anyone. When someone gives me a plant, I actually put it in a separate pot these days, and nurture it completely separate from my garden in order to check it for little inadvertent gifts that came with it. And horsetail is one of them because I don't have a horsetail in my garden.
Nice. So we've got Bill, I think. Hello, Bill. You're on the garden show.
Yes. Hi. I have some Brussels sprouts that I have in a little greenhouse that I made that overwintered. It actually grew Brussels for most of winter, but really tiny ones. And then I was about ready to try to harvest and it went to seed. So my question is it going to be viable next year? So what should I do with this? I hate to kill something that's trying to grow again.
Right. This was a good year to overwinter Brussels. I ended up pulling mine out at the last just because I was ready to renew my bed this spring. So you're not alone there. The question we have to know is they probably won't produce Brussels again once they're going to seed, but could you let it go to seed and harvest the seed? Yes, probably you could. I did that with parsnips a couple of years ago, and I've got parsnips snips for life now. But I think that the question is, was it a hybrid Brussels sprout? Because hybrid seeds don't necessarily come out as the product, the plant you're looking
right
for, or viable seeds. So I'm not sure. But, you know, if you've got room to try it, give it a try.
Now, would they just naturally seed and reseed themselves on the bed, or do I need to collect them?
Yes and yes. Okay. They probably will naturally reseed themselves, and then you can cull through and see which ones you want to keep or not. And Brussels sprouts are biennial, so it's going to grow vegetatively one year and then flower and seed the next. So that those same plants are done, but yeah, you can collect the seeds. And hopefully they'll germinate. Do a little germination test. You could, just put some in like a wet paper towel and see how well they germinate. And just give it a try. Yeah, like Molly said, if you've got the space, do the experiment.
Yeah, okay, perfect. I will.
All right, thanks so much for your question. That was interesting. And might encourage other people to do that. I know for many of us, this is how we keep kale growing, that the kale plants stay and go to seed. And I don't know about you, but I never need to plant kale. I've got plenty of kale coming up, and I can dig up those seedlings and move them around in the spring to wherever I want them.
Yeah, it works pretty well. I wanted to mention one more. It's a weed more than a thug. So maybe I'll save that for a weeds conversation. But there are several that plants that start from seed that I kind of consider vague thugs. They're not quite as hard to deal with as are the ones with the underground stems, but you still kind of have to keep them in check. And kind of the classic one for me are forget-me-nots. They are everywhere in my garden, and I usually let them flower everywhere that they've planted unless they're, coming up right next to some vegetables or something that I don't want to have to compete. And then I start pulling them out every year. And I still end up with tons of forget-me-nots during the blooming season. But they're so much easier to take care of than plants that are reproducing by rhizomes. So I let those go. The other one I'll let go are like the yellow violets that are wild plants, and they're gorgeous, but they kind of explode their seeds all over the place, which is fine. And again, they're easy to control. If they're growing someplace you don't want them, you just pull out those plants, and actually with violets, just eat them.
I know another one that really fits in this. They're absolutely beautiful, and you can probably buy them and think you want them, and you might, are the Welsh poppies. So these are the ones that they're not the blue poppies that we all love. They're not the bread poppies, and they're not the orange oriental style poppies. So and nor are the California poppies. So they're not all those things, but they have a clear yellow flower, sometimes trending till orange, and every seed appears to be viable. And I have poppy seeds coming everywhere in my every bed, even the beds that are not close to the poppies. So that's one that if you don't want to have a future battle with it, I would be cautious about putting Welsh poppies in.
Yes, I love them, though. Those flowers are so pretty. Another poppy that does the same thing as the bread seed poppies, they produce seeds like mad that also all seem to be viable. And I kind of call and pick so that I, you know, have a sensible number of those plants, but they grow all over the place. Again, easier to get rid of than some of the others. And then the last one I wanted to mention that I kind of have all over the yard is the foxglove, the digitalis. And often I'll deadhead them as well, which is the other way. If you really want to have these plants and you don't want to pull all the plants out, you can cut the flowers off. But, man, that would be a pain in the forget-me-nots or the violas or even some of the poppies. Digitalis or foxglove is a little bit easier to do that way. I just let them go. And if they land in a place and they're growing in a place I enjoy them, great, they stay. Otherwise, I pull them up.
One of the things I always think about with foxglove, and I agree with you, they're gorgeous. I think they're perfect roadside plants, those big stands of pink and white bells, really so enjoyable. But in a garden bed or a cultivated area, each one of those stalks probably creates a million seeds, and that is not an exaggeration. So if you are letting it bloom in your yard, when it's time to remove it, I would, just as it's just about done, cut it carefully and turn it and put it into either a bag or a burn pile or the garbage without spilling those million seeds on the way.
I started just putting the stalks down in an area where I'm like, okay, if you grow down there, that's fine. Go ahead, cover that slope with foxgloves. But yeah, those are ones. And again, it's like, the ones that I do the most battle with every year are the ones with rhizomes. The ones with seeds, so much easier to kind of handle. But yeah, so think very carefully before you accept a gift of or purchase a plant that is a ground cover. They're great for places that you really need a ground cover, but not so good where you don't.
And again, you know, we may have listed a plant that you treasure and enjoy in your yard. We totally get that. And you may have a plant that's doing so well that, you know, it's a thug to you. One of the great parts about having your own garden is that you're in charge and you get to choose. But I would say, think about the trend of how plants are behaving if you're a new gardener and you have a new perennial bed, and be ready to anticipate the ones that seem to be doing really well right now. At first, you're so thrilled with them, but think down the road a couple of years, and will you still be? And, you know, it might be worth keeping them in check or just having a note in your mind to pay attention.
Oh, there's one last plant I wanted to mention to be cautious with, and that's the Lysimachia, the kind of yellow open bowl-shaped flowers. Ooh, those reproduce by rhizomes, and they are a beastly successful plant. So be careful with those, too.
Yeah, the other one is Irish moss that gets sold as a ground cover. It's so darn cute, and you will have that one everywhere as well.
Yeah, so be careful with stuff. I would keep watering all those little plants you have out there. It's not something that we typically have to do here, but you definitely want to do it here. I like to water in the morning instead of the evening because of the I don't like the moisture to sit around my plants. Particularly, you know, we don't have usually too much problem with powdery mildew in warm weather, but you can. Who knows what's going to happen this year? So I like to water in the morning so those plants have a chance to absorb that water, and the leaves make sure they dry off by the evening.
And even though it's frost-free Friday, know that it's not too late to do any significant amount of planting or transplanting. The whole point is to have a good time gardening. And if you get to enjoy flowers and have a taste of growing your own food, then that is perfect. Well, really appreciate joining us this morning. Kitty, great to hear how it's going in your garden. We're wrapping up the garden show here for Raven Radio KCAW Sitka. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
KCAW Sitka.